Hello, everyone. Welcome to How to Lie with Statistics with Max and Jules.
Hello. In this session, we are answering some of our viewers' questions. The first question or statement or command is by Mr. Miles, and he is telling us to choose one of the quotations inside of the front cover and discuss how it relates to the intro. So the first quotation we're going to use is... there are three kinds of lies: lies, demanded lies, and statistics. So, lies, basically a lie is something, transforming the true to something that's
not true.
Basically.
Yeah, a falsehood.
A demand lie is, I guess you would call that like a lie that is forced, I guess.
I guess, yeah.
I guess a forced lie. And then a statistics lie is basically rearranging the number, or saying numbers mean something when they don't, or showing that numbers mean something when they really don't.
Yeah.
So.
We have some more questions coming from Mark Miles.
So the next is, put the second paragraph on page 18 into your own words.
So I can handle that one. So the second paragraph on page 18 is about a river. So it starts off saying, a river, as we are told, cannot rise above its source. But it can seem to if there's a pumping station concealed somewhere about it. It is equally true that the result of the sampling study is no better than the sample it is based on, and so on and so forth. This kind of analogy is sort of just... comparing the two, you know, a river can't be higher up on ground than the lake that it is sourced from. But it can seem like it if there's a pumping station. And that's kind of the same thing as, you know, data collected in a sample can seem one way instead of another, depending on how you manipulate the data and how you change it around and display it to show what it really means and what it, I guess, doesn't mean. So that's what paragraph 2 on page 18 means.
So the next question is by Mr. Miles. What is the advantage of a stratified random sample, and what difficulties does it propose according to this chapter?
So stratifying, populations when you sample them is sort of just, you know, dividing them up into different sections. And I'm sorry, what was the question again?
The question is, what is the advantage of a stratified random sample, and what difficulties does it pose according to the chapter?
Here's an example. If population density varies greatly in a region, stratifying a sample will ensure that the estimates are made accurately in different parts of the region, and that the comparisons between the regions can be made with equal statistical power. For example, maybe you're in Ontario, Canada, and you take a survey. And it's people in the less populated, Yukon region of Canada also take the same survey, but there's way less people in Yukon than Ontario. There's a disparity between the populations of the north and south, but you can kind of compare the two still because they're both stratified. I guess that's it.
All right. Mr. Miles is just filled with questions today, because he have another question. Which kind of average would give me the best way to compare the performance of two classes of a required math course, and why? So I'll answer that. I would say the mean, other than the median, will be the best the best average you can use. And the reason I say that is because the median only gives you a point where there's a few above this number and a few more below that number. Whereas a mean is the average, the actual average of the class's the class's math course. So I would say the mean is the right way to go.
Yeah.
So
same.
This is Mr. Miles' last question.
Last question.
What does the author mean on page 45 when he says, and we're getting a quote out, when he says, hardly anybody is exactly normal in any way, just as 100 tall stipendies will rarely come up exactly 50 heads and 50 tails. So basically what he's trying to say is when you're looking for something, you're not going to get exactly what you expect. Like when you toss a coin for like 50 times, you're not going to exactly get 25 heads and 25 tails. You're going to get maybe around that number, but you're not going to exactly get that number. So,
yeah. So, yeah. You know, if you're striving to be normal, there's no real thing as normal.
There's no normal.
Yeah. You know, normal is really just based on your perspective. So,
yeah.
Those are the questions from Podcast 1. Stay tuned for the questions from Podcast 2.
Thanks.
We're back, and we're going to be answering the questions from Podcast number 2. So, question number 1. Jules, do you care to read it out?
Sure. Okay. So, Mr. Miles asked the first question. He said, the author suggests that some reported differences may not be real differences at all. Others, even though they can be shown to be real differences, should still be ignored. Explain how each of these two situations can arise and give an example of each.
Okay, so what I think this means is that, you know, when you take a sample for making statistics there are, you know, lots of things that you're looking for, but there might be some small variations in the statistic itself. Like, say, we're working for the car company Honda, and we say that 20% of people that buy Honda cars buy Honda Civics. That's the number we're looking at. But within that number, there's some slight variation. You know, some are blue, some are green, some are red. But that's not what we're looking at, so that's something that can be ignored. But overall, you know, 20% buy the Civic. It's an example of like something small that will be picked up on when you survey people, but it's not quite necessary in sort of displaying the information gathered.
Okay, so Mr. Miles' next question is, what is a semi-attached figure? So he's basing that off of Chapter 7, which is called the semi-attached figure. And what I've learned from this chapter that a semi-attached figure is a number that is misleading, or a figure that is misleading to a statement, basically, but it relates to some parts of the statement, but it doesn't relate all the way. So it's a very misleading statement, basically. And on page, I think it's on page 79, there's a quote, and it said, well, they give an example, and it said, it was reported that the number of death chargeable to steam railroads in one recent year was 4,712. And it go on to say that this is a very misleading statement because, I mean, it's semi-true there was that many, but they're making it seem like these people jump in front of the railroads and die like that, where that's not even the case because most of them were actually on board. So, yeah. Well, not most of them. 131 or 32 was on board. But, you know, basically what I'm trying to say is they're misleading, saying everybody jumped in front of the railroad that year.
Right.
So, Mr. Miles' next question is, what does post hoc mean? So, thank you, Mr. Miles, for helping me out with this question. But post hoc is basically, it's basically arguing that because something occurred, well, okay, without doing experiment, basically, you assume that something caused something to happen. Let's say, for example, you're saying you were sick 1 week, and then the next week you weren't sick. And you think about everything that you did during that week, something you did differently, and assume that's the reason I'm not sick. For example, that week that you were sick, you went outside that whole week that you were sick. The week that you weren't sick, you didn't go outside. So now you're assuming because you didn't go outside, that made you not sick anymore. So,
cool. Okay.
So, Mr. Miles, last question is, list several kinds of correlation that might lead to post hoc reasoning. So, I guess I just gave you one.
Let's just come up with one more.
Yeah, one more.
Yeah.
Okay. So, let's take bullying.
Bullying. Great topic.
Example. So, there's this child named, I don't know, Adam.
Adam.
And he was bullied for his whole entire middle school year. And during that year, he would wear Adidas for a say.
Mm-hmm.
He went into high school, and he stopped wearing Adidas. He started wearing Nike.
Right.
Now that he's wearing Nike, he's not being bullied anymore. So, now Adam is thinking, I wonder why they stopped bullying me. I went from wearing Adidas to wearing Nike, and now all of a sudden, they're not bullying me anymore. That is a post hoc.
Great. Okay, yeah. So let's move on to the misleading graphs that we found ourselves. I found a post on Forbes.com, the popular financial publication, Forbes, specifically about misleading graphs. So it was, you know, very, very helpful. And, you know, a lot of them, the first few examples are, you know, sales examples for companies, and sometimes it looks like the bars are constantly raising throughout the years. You know, through 2006 through 2011, there's like, you know, a steady increase in profit, but that's all about the scale. You know, so on some of them there's just no scale even depicted, but on the other one there's, you know, scale whatever every $50 million it goes up, and that you know, I guess really just changes how the graphs, you know, are perceived and how they're viewed by the common people like us. Yeah. So Jules, what was your example?
Okay, so my example came from Statistics How To, and this site gave me different examples of how statistics can be misleading. One thing that really stood out to me was the Colgate advertisement. On the sign, it said more than 80% of dentists recommend Colgate. I thought that was interesting because, you know, brush my teeth with Colgate, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
So I went on to read it, and it said, but something that you don't know, that these dentists, they were trying out multiple toothpastes. So, like, just because these dentists recommend Colgate, 80%, the 20% recommended other brands. And, I mean, is this something that you don't, like, you don't keep track of? Even though, like, 20% recommended other brands, a part of that 80% could have recommended the other brands, too. This doesn't mean they all recommended just one. They could have recommended any of them.
Right, yeah. Yeah, so, I hear those statistics all the time. You know, you see commercials like 9 out of 10 dentists choose, whatever, Orbit gum.
Right. So, yeah. These kind of misleading statistic was actually banned by the Advertising Standards Authority.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Okay, so yeah, let's, you know, we're running up on the 15-minute mark. Let's kind of go through the last few chapters of the book.
Sure.
We finished the book this week, so we're going to go over chapters 9 and 10. Chapter 9 was a little bit longer than normal, I think. But it was definitely very informative. So the first sort of example they talk about is a darkening shadow over the United States, over different states in the United States, showing how much the federal government spending is in reference to like how much each state makes. So the picture here, the top picture, shows every state west of the Mississippi except for part of Missouri, Arkansas, and Louisiana. All of them are you know, shaded in because the incomes of those states equal the amount of spending the federal government does. But, you know, that's a really compelling graph, but, you know, the states take up a lot of space, but there's not a lot of people. Underneath it, it shows the same population density as, you know, pretty much half of the United States, but only, you know, in New York, Pennsylvania, Maryland, Delaware, Jersey, and New England. And that's not really a very powerful graph, you know, as a viewer or as a person trying to, you know, talk about how much money is being spent and scare people.
I think that's a good explanation of chapter 9. I think you can go on to chapter 10.
You want to go on to chapter 10?
Unless you have something else you want to say?
I mean, I don't know. They kind of use a lot of examples in chapter 9. I liked the one right after the United States one about the family income. And it says, in 1949, the Bureau of the Census said that the income of the average family was $3,100. But a different foundation, the Russell Sage Foundation, said that the average income was $5,004. And that's because you take the total income of the United States and divide it by the population, average it out, and get $1,251. And say for a family of four, that becomes $5,004. So it's really about how you find your averages. Let's move on to chapter 10.
Okay, so in chapter 10, what I found interesting is they gave you a list of questions that you basically you need to think about when you're dealing with statistics. So the first question is, who says so? So, you know, like when you read something in a magazine or you're recommended something in a commercial or something, you see this doctor in a white coat and she or he is talking about how great this product is. But you really need to know who this person is. And another thing they actually went on to talk about is colleges. Like a researcher from, I'm trying to find the example. They said a researcher from,
I think it was Cornell, right?
Oh, yes, Cornell University.
Yeah.
So basically, they're using Cornell University as their person, basically. But Cornell really doesn't have anything to do with it. It's just the fact that this person is from Cornell.
The survey was taken from students at Cornell, but
right.
The findings were summarized by someone not from Cornell. But because, you know, it says, you know, it's sort of displayed as Cornell University did this study.
Yeah.
But it's not actually Cornell doing the study. It's just the students that go to Cornell.
Right. So another question they ask is, how does he know? So basically, what they're trying to tell you to do is figure out, like, what was their experiment? Their experiment seemed to be logical. Did it have any errors or anything that could affect their results in anything? And another question that I found interesting was, what's misleading? Like, when they give out your averages, is it a mean? Is it a median? And does it provide enough information for you to say, oh, okay, this seems reasonable?
Go team.
That's
best project ever.
Well, you know, so that's the book. This is our last episode of How to Lie with Statistics.
I Jules and Max.
And I'm Max, and thank you. Good night.
Bye-bye.